Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
While Chicago adjusts to working at home, the score is there for you.
I appreciate the tone that you guys have taken and wish more would follow suit. Keep it up.
You guys give us a chance to take a break, and that's what we all need right now.
Thank you for the distraction from the coronavirus. I appreciate what you guys are doing.
We are Chicago's number one sports station, 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago.
The Score!
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I don't think we're going to play NBA basketball again this year. I don't see it happening. I don't see Major League Baseball happening. And I see the NFL and college football starting late. Because I don't know how you feel, but until there's a protocol or a vaccine, what happens when you start up again and the next person comes down with the virus? Do you suspend play again, or do you just let it go? I think the fear with everyone concerned is going to be palpable even once we come back.
7:50, the game in Portland. Talked to Jeff Van Gundy, and he was his upbeat usual self. So he's shooting down the idea of the NBA. I got to tell you, I don't know why, but there's something about that guy. I think it's because of the way that he had the issue with the Bulls. But when I think about him, David, I don't know what your image is. I think of him basically as the kind of guy that is grabbed onto a player with his ragamuffin hair being dragged around the floor. And that's what he's doing here. He's trying to take a grip of the game and just be like a human mop head as he's dragged across the basketball court. Not a fan of Jeff Van Gundy, but he's a bright guy and he does a good job. And I know I shouldn't shoot down the idea.
He is a bright guy.
From him.
He does a good job. I do envision him being dragged along the floor every time that I hear him talk, though. It's inevitable in Chicago to have that image of him. I understand where he's coming from, too, Mully, and this is going to be, I think, a daily exercise, because what happens is we hear from people who have good intentions, and we're hearing from people that are smart guys and in our industry, you know, whether it's Kirk Herbstreit or on Friday, or Jeff Van Gundy today, or whoever it will be tomorrow. There is not a vaccine, and there is the possibility that we'll return to play, and there will be an athlete that tests positive. And you know what? There are answers to questions that we don't know what the questions are yet. We don't know what the answers are yet. But I don't know either if it just want to say, because of that, we're not going to know, and they're not going to be able to figure it out. And I'm surprised, I guess, at how people have begun to look at this in terms of the, you know, they're exploring the worst case scenario. And the worst case scenario is there's no NBA, there's no NHL, there's no football, there's no NFL, there's no college football. But I think that somewhere in between, there's a point of discussion where there can be, there might be, and, you know, you optimistically, you're thinking there will be. Jeff Van Gundy saying that, you know, the setting this scenario out isn't surprising, knowing the kind of stuff you get typically from Jeff Van Gundy.
I want to read Mark Berman, okay? I like the New York Post telling me that the NBA is, quote, very determined to have a champion, and that they are exploring all sorts of ideas and how to go about that. I don't want to hear, well, you know, once you start playing, oh no, everybody's going to get a cold. And that's Van Gundy. Like, listen, I think the harder thing to do is come up with an idea of how you go about it, as opposed to just saying, well, someone's going to get it again, and here we go. Well, that's not what they want.
Listen,
we have guys getting better, David.
Let me ask you this. Aren't they talking to Jeff Van Gundy? Because the assumption is always going to be, or not the assumption, but there's an understanding that there's a possibility that exists that there will be no NBA. There will be no NHL. We had a web poll question, or a Twitter question yesterday, which league will start first? And had 2,800 people responded, and it was MLB. There's always going to be that possibility of the worst case scenario. But I think that we talk to guys like Van Gundy and Herb Street sometimes looking for creative solutions, not to just reinforce the idea that there could be nothing to talk about or nothing to watch for the 2020 calendar. But I think that you are looking for someone to kind of suggest something that makes sense. And I think that you see some of those alternatives offered. Like I think Dustin pointed out a story in regard to college football in the Sports Business Journal. They're talking about moving their season up potentially as an idea, as a point of discussion to July to play the season or begin it in warm weather when it's more conducive to some of these things. I don't know if that makes sense either, but it's a lot more interesting to entertain than just to think that there will be no season in the NBA, there will be no season in the NFL, and these kind of things.
I think part of the problem, David, is that our sports schedule has been confused. I think our sports calendar has been so interrupted that the way that we look at our sports calendar is completely corrupted. So in Jeff Van Gundy's mind, I mean, here's a guy that knows what it's like to go through the marathon that is an NBA season. That's the first thing you learn when you're covering the NBA, is that it is a marathon, not a sprint. It is a long year. It is a real kind of grind. You get into these February games where you're just trying to get to the other side of that month before you get to really meaningful basketball. And it's a difficult thing to slog through. And then when you get to the end of the season, it's like, okay, this should happen now, and then that happens. All of that has been interrupted. You know, I had a week in quarantine. I was off last week for spring break. I didn't know when to get up, when to go to bed. It was like, right. Thank God I'm back working, so now I have a schedule.
The structure, right?
And it throws you off. You know, my kids did not have their homeschooling last week. So this week, they're up. They're going to be up and going here in a little bit. I'm going to start hearing some movement upstairs as they get ready to start their school day, because they've changed some of the rules even on that. You know, they're going to have to be actually present for it. So I just think that you need certain structure in your life, and sometimes you're used to it in a certain way, and if you're Van Gundy or Kirk Herbstreit, this may interrupt your flow to the point where you can't imagine something going on.
Can you make announcements? Like, are you going to make announcements, daily announcements, like they do at school? Are you going to, like, say to your kids who has their report to class, like, you know, and for lunch today there will be beef jerky?
Yeah, we're down to that here.
That's what you should do. Listen, you know, you make some good points. The lack of structure is a problem, Molly. But I think also this reveals sometimes, and I'm not saying that there's any wrong way to look at this or get through this sort of crisis that we all face, but it has, to me, I think, revealed how people sort of view the world sometimes. Is it glass half empty or glass half full? I think it separated people into optimists, pessimists, and realists. And that's okay. But I think that when you hear some of these projections of there's not going to be a season, or there's that, it tells me that that's a person that is maybe conditioned to looking at things the worst possible result. And then you talk to some other people that look at, okay, well, we could play as early as June 1st, possibly, if everything goes right and there's this and there's that. That's a person that's typically looking at the glass half full. Somewhere in between is typically where, I'm not saying typically. That's where you would want to be, because you're going to be able to look at both of those sides and both of those viewpoints and consider them as possibilities.
But I don't think you bring on a Jeff Van Gundy to get a negative comment from him. I think you bring him on thinking that he's connected and he'll have ideas. And his ideas, well, the sky is falling and nothing can happen, might be the right idea. You know, this seems to be changing in a pretty dramatic fashion. You know, they have approved some anti-malarial drugs that may work on this. You know, maybe they're going to come up with a way of treating it. I don't know. But certainly we're in a very difficult spot here. You gotta have a little imagination. And I like the idea of talking about different changes to the baseball thing. I just don't want to see it happen. I just want that. I just want it back. I don't know that I feel the same way about the NBA season, David, because it was interrupted and stopped.
I just think that, and I'm not, look, it's easy to criticize Jeff Van Gundy because of the place that he holds in Chicago, you know, sports, you know, yes, history sort of. But I think just what I'm trying to say is when you ask guys like Jeff Van Gundy to make determinations and he comes out with something like that, it's almost to me like, you know, asking Anthony Fauci who the Bears should draft, you know, in the second round. You know, that's not going Van Gundy's not a doctor. He's not an expert. If somebody like Fauci had suggested that there will be no football season or somebody like that, it carries a lot more weight than having a former coach who's an analyst, who's a very good analyst, right, make the same sort of projection. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. And I think, again, the takeaway here isn't that somebody thinks it's not going to happen. It's that they are determined to make it happen, and they're going to figure out a way to do it. And I mean, I don't know how you go about doing that, but I like the idea that they're trying to come up with ideas and how we would resolve it and how you would have, right, some sort of tournament, or you would have some sort of playoff run. I think it would be wiser, frankly, for the NBA, if this interruption lasts as long as we imagine it will, to come back with sort of a playoff-type showcase as opposed to trying to continue their season and then getting to the playoffs. I think, you know, I don't know that I want to see any more Bulls games, okay? I think that aspect of the season, and I'm not being mean about it, I'm just saying,
right,
that part of it may be done, and we may now have to look at, okay, the season stops there, here are the teams that are in the playoffs, here we go with what the playoffs is going to look like.
Fair enough. 312-644-6767. We've got some callers, Mully, that we need to get to, but we do need to get to a break because we, yeah, have a lot more to discuss. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. We got a lot of people want to check in. David, let's get out to the callers. Shoelaces is on the south side. Good morning, Shoelaces. How are you?
Hey, Shoelaces.
Hey, how you doing today? How y'all doing today?
Good.
Oh, are you kidding? This is the dream.
Yes, okay. This is what I want to say about the Bears. I think they did decent during the offseason, but I want you to know this. If the Bears don't make the playoffs, go 10-6 or 11-5 when the season starts, I think the Bears might make a change with that general manager because you only have one winning season since you've been here.
Yeah, well, Shoelaces, everyone can agree. Yeah.
Well, do you, Mully, do you think that if they don't make the playoffs and go 11-5, that means it's an unusual season?
Hey, maybe there's a 14-game season, but I think – it will. I think they have to make the playoffs. I think that's fair. I think it's, you know, every move they've made is win now. If they don't win now, then you got to look at the guy that made all the moves. And I think it's a fair way to operate. I don't think it's unfair to Ryan Pace. I think he's gotten every opportunity, and I think it's time to judge it.
I think that you go into the season with that mentality. Playoffs are bust. You're ready to make changes right. If you don't make the postseason. First of all, they're never going to declare that because that's something they always leave for other people to determine. They don't want to put that kind of public pressure on Pace. But how do you get to in that scenario? How do you get to 11-5? Do you start out and you collapse? Everything is about the context of that moment. I think that you want to keep the heat on. So if you want to go into this year thinking that way, I'm not going to tell you not to because. That is the reality. That's the way you're structured your offseason moves. You're built to win in 2020 and get to the postseason.
The other element here, David, is when they hired this guy, they talked about the lack of experience and the fact that they were going to grow with him and all the rest of it. And now he's been in that job long enough, right? I mean, if he can't win now, then I think you got to move on to somebody else. They might not have told him that, but he clearly has gotten that message based on the move they've made.
I think you're right. I think he probably feels it, but it's building. Last week, Mully, when you were off, we had the 5 at 5 question referencing the Pro Football Focus, and I know we don't always give them a lot of put a lot of weight necessarily in everything that they grade, and it's just another outlet, just another resource. But they had the top 10. Draft busts since they started evaluating, drafts back in 2015. Mm-hmm. Ryan Pace had 3 of them. I mean, yep. Ryan Pace had 3 of the 10.
It's shocking. Let's get to John. John's in Rolling Meadows. Good morning, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Thanks for. I hope you're both being safe here because this is not something to laugh about. It's not. It is serious, and it's scary. It's gotten scary. Look at what did you expect the Bears to do when their front office, when their owners continuously bring in inexperienced people to be the head coach and the general manager? You don't bring in people with experience in either area, and now you've got a head coach that's one-dimensional. He wants to play that run-and-shoot offense only. He only gives the running game just a glance. If you're going to make the playoffs, you've got to run the ball. If you don't, I have them finishing third right now.
Well, John, thanks for the phone call. But
thanks,
here's
John.
The problem. Who won the Super Bowl last year? Was it the running team? Was it the team that ground its way to glory? Or was it the team that throws the ball and the mentor of the Bears head coach? I mean, Philadelphia's won, David, and so has The scheme works. It's just
the scheme works
if you don't have the players.
The team with the Hall of Fame quarterback won the last Super Bowl.
That's right.
John, and I love John, but you can't pretend like 2018 didn't happen, in fairness, because Matt Nagy has a lot of work to do to commit to the running game and all the things about the scheme that we have established. Ryan Pace has got to draft more intelligently and make some better signings. But in 2018, they did have a successful season. They gave them a 2019 that allowed for the complacency to happen. So let's not pretend that that never happened.
Will is on the road. Good morning, Will.
Hey, Will.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope everybody's doing all right. I want to touch back on the NCAA bringing back athletes for the spring but not the winter. Obviously, the main one that would affect them would be the basketball programs and then, of course, the tournament. So my thought process to that would be you invite the players from 2020 to come back to the same school they were at. You bring them back. You only let them be for the tournament, not the whole season. You only let the 2020 players go against other 2020 players. So you don't intermix the new with the old, if you will. You somehow figure out a way to divvy up which quarter they each play, which how many minutes they get, something like that. You figure that out. You let them play, and then at the end of the tournament, their names get listed in alphabetical order underneath the current players in alphabetical order, and you go from there. I mean, it gives them that opportunity to go back and get what was robbed from them, and then it gives everybody the opportunity to see what could have been from that.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. Can you imagine a coach going along with that? You know, you build the program, and then you
really
get to the tournament, and you bring these guys in for the second quarter. I can't imagine that.
I can't either, Mully. And I ask you this. I mean, when you look at the NCAA tournament specifically, and we're talking about giving seniors an extra year because they were deprived of that, how many seniors in recent years – the way that this has gone in college basketball have influenced the course of the tournament? Now, you're talking about a very small group of players or student athletes that are affected by this, and I think the ruling kind of addresses the many over the few, and I can understand why they would not let basketball players back for another season, because then you're opening the door even wider and you're inviting more complex issues.
It's unfortunate that they didn't get their conference tournaments completed, and it's unfortunate they didn't get their moment in their one shining moment in the NCAAs. But, you know, it's unfortunate, a lot of unfortunate. It's just that's probably an unbelievable life lesson for everybody to learn, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what else you take away from it than that. Let's get to Kevin. Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Morning, Kevin.
You missed an answer on your poll from yesterday. It clearly should be the PGA. No fans.
Huh.
I mean, the social distancing, they're clearly to be 6 feet apart. They should be back first, and there should be match play and primetime golf. The golf should for sure be first. And I love John Heyman, but guys, that was asinine yesterday saying people are still saying June 1st. The state of Virginia is closed down until June 15th. So, yeah, I know I love the Cubs. I want them back as soon as possible. But anyone thinks that this sport is starting before August 1st, you're just not using your brain. Steve Stone said you need a month. If there are states that are still closed down through the middle of June, this isn't going to happen, and this is just exploding now in Florida. Where are you going to have spring training? Like, you got to use your brain. That was really idiotic of Heyman, but I think it's PGA. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. That's interesting. Heyman talked about before when it came out on Friday, he suggested that it would be June 1st, optimistically, but that was before everything got moved back to the end of April. And I think, didn't John sort of concede that was maybe a little bit early as well?
Yeah.
After that?
David, I don't think John's an idiot. I think that John's talking to people. I think that that his information is always really solid. I just think that there's all sorts of things going on, and we have to be able to approach it
if not day to day, certainly week to week and month to month here. And I
Kevin,
think that,
yeah.
Yeah. It's cruel to call him names, Kevin.
Jesus. He makes a good point about the PGA, but I only had four spots in the poll, so I only took the four major sports.
And you know,
I didn't
what?
Include
yeah,
golf.
I mean, yeah, golf is, I don't understand why we can't have like a match play thing. So I'm talking to a guy yesterday who's telling me that I was saying, can I get some action down on Belarus soccer? And he laughed and he said, you know, the biggest handle, I'm not making this up, the biggest handle last weekend was from the Ukrainian Ping Pong League. Apparently, they're still playing table tennis in the Ukraine. It doesn't mean that anybody wants to tune in and bet on it, but I think golf might work that way. Gideon is in Des Plaines. Good morning, Gideon. How are you?
Morning, Gideon.
I'm doing well. I have an idea for the NBA season. What you need to do, and I think this is why people are in a tizzy over it, is you need to divide the season into two. You need to say that the previous season that occurred was season A, and then there's a season B. So season A, the NBA should come out and announce that the Milwaukee Bucks and the LA Lakers were the best two teams from the East and West. I think it was the LA Lakers with the best record. So announce that. And then you say, we're going to have a 14-game regular season, and each team in each league would play, in each conference would play each other. You take the best four teams from each at the end of that. You have a playoff of the best eight teams, four from each conference, and then have a championship and name the best team after that, whoever wins the championship.
Hmm. Creative. What do you think,
yeah.
Molly?
Yeah, I think creative. I don't know what else to think about it.
Molly, let me ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Before we break, would you watch, did you see where they're going to have NBA players kind of playing against each other? And I think in NBA 2K, is that what they're doing, or video games on Friday?
Yes.
On ESPN?
Yeah.
Would you watch
playing,
that?
Yep. I'm not a Fortnite guy. Aren't they playing Fortnite? No, I would not watch it. But
yeah.
But I wouldn't watch any of that stuff anyway, right? I mean, you can go on and watch people play video games. It's very popular, but
it is.
A person that doesn't play them, I don't think I would, but I think there is a market for it. I'm more interested in the rumor that Tiger and Phil Part 2 could happen, or, you know, maybe even adding, you know, Brady and Manning to that mix and miking everyone up and having them talk some trash.
Now, that's good television. That's a really good idea for a television void to fill. So if they could get that taken care of, oh, by, I don't know, next weekend?
We got Bigs Time next. That's good radio. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Brad Bigs. Bigs Time. Bigs. With Mully and Haw. Bigs Time. The Bigs Report. With Brad Bigs. Bigs Time. Bigs. His name is Brad Bigs. Brad Bigs talks football with you.
Brad Bigs is the football man from the Chicago Tribune, a long-time contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Big V!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
All right. So you did a great job with the mock draft, and we certainly appreciate that you went 50 so that we could see who the Bears take. How realistic, and listen, I understand the value of the positions and what they need, but do you really believe that they're going to take the two positions that would help them most, or might they go with this this altered kind of reality where they see something they don't have and they jump on it?
Well, I'll say, first of all, that I think a lot of people were not real happy with the mock draft when it was released yesterday on the internet, that the idea that the Bears would go through their first two picks without adding an offensive lineman made me an idiot, to be quite honest with you. giving them a cornerback and a wide receiver with the first two picks, which are positions that I very much deem to be need areas for them. And I'm not saying that offensive line is not a need area, but when I look at it, let's say with one of those two picks, the Bears are able to get a player that is something in between Cody Whitehair and James Daniels, who a couple of starting interior offensive linemen for him right now, both selected by Ryan Pace in the second round of the draft. Let's say the player they add is somewhere between those two guys, which is a guy that can come in and start for you day one. What does that player in the lineup at right guard do for the Bears over the potential other options that they would have at that starting right guard position for an offense that was 29th in the National Football League in scoring last year? About how high does it go? That's kind of how I look at it. I believe that, and there's a segment of folks out there that are perfectly content with the Javon Wimses of the world and Riley Ridley and some other wide receivers that the Bears have that have really yet to produce anything on the field. They're perfectly content with them. And a segment of people out there that believe that their playmakers are just fine, that it's simply an offensive line issue. And I'm wondering how much of, say, Chiefs football and some of these other explosive offenses these people actually get to watch from time to time.
Fair enough, Brad. You know, and I think that people overreact to the first kind of look at these mock drafts, and this was yours. I think for people that haven't seen it yet on ChicagoTribune.com, you have the Bears taking cornerback Noah Igbinoghane from Auburn.
You got it.
The fastest...
I believe that's how it's pronounced, too.
Thank you.
David worked on it.
I worked on it. So he's the fastest cornerback in the SEC, and you also have them taking Michael Pittman Jr., the wide receiver, big, fast wide receiver from USC. So Brad, I get that you're saying that these two are guys who address needs. They also are guys that you could envision being, you know, day one contributors. I guess where I would play devil's advocate a little bit is that number one, if you never address your offensive line or if you, when you know it's your biggest need and you don't try to be draft driven in that, you know, in that area, are you doing yourself a disservice for long term? Are you putting the short term over the long term? And I think that's the question I don't know if that has an easy answer to.
Yeah, no, and I certainly understand that. I think they've got to do something beyond going out and getting German Fetty as a guy who's coming in on a prove-it deal trying to regain some form in the National Football League. And it wouldn't surprise me if they took a guard with one of their first two picks. It also wouldn't surprise me if they traded down with one of their first two picks in order to get a guard there at some point. You can find, I mean, there are teams that routinely find pretty darn good interior offensive linemen in the third and fourth rounds of the draft. Now, those are rounds that the Bears lack picks in right now, but you see teams go out and do that on a regular basis, and they have to be better on the offensive line than they were this past season. I think everyone should be reminded they're going to return four of the starters. It's not like there's going to be big-time changes to the personnel on that offensive line. I think most people have accepted that, and I clearly believe they need to be better guard. I think in an ideal world, you've got a young guy that can help out. I just look at that wide receiver position where you've got Allen Robinson, you've got Anthony Miller coming off reconstructive shoulder surgery for the second straight year, and then you've got a whole bunch of unknowns. And I say when they had difficulty scoring and when Jimmy Graham, who has three touchdowns in his last 24 regular season games this year, solution at tight end, I think you might need a little bit more firepower at wide receiver, and I don't think you could go wrong with a young cornerback, which, as we discussed yesterday, is a position they haven't taken high in the draft since 2014.
The other element here is that both those players would be able to contribute immediately. And I understand if you draft an offensive lineman, you want to plug him in and have him there for good. I just don't know that you need it as much as you do someone to score a touchdown. They're not. I said this yesterday, and I'm not even joking around. They're not a running team, okay? So they need to protect the passer. They need to get rid of the ball in a hurry. They need to have people that can move, and they need a deep threat, which they don't have. I just think that if you can score a touchdown or you can prevent a touchdown, that's what the way you go. And as much as we want to talk about the offensive line, I worry it's irrelevant sometimes.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it irrelevant, but they've got to get skill position talent. You know, as I said briefly yesterday, there was that sort of hilarious moment where Vic Fangio had returned with Matt Nagy. Okay, there were questions as to whether or not Vic would stick around when Fox left and then Nagy came in. And Vic, you know, had some options and decided that ultimately he wanted to be back with the Bears. So Vic re-ups with the Bears, and there was a press conference, and, you know, they had been playing pretty good defense under Fox. It was just the offense was awful. And, you know, Vic was talking about how the defense needed to be better, and he said that, you know, their so-called good players needed to be better. And it really kind of stuck with you because it was like, wait a minute, some of these guys are pretty good, right?
Yeah.
But the Bears' so-called playmakers have really not delivered on offense, with the exception of Allen Robinson. He's been fantastic. He's been productive. He's been, you know, I don't want to go to the Mohsen Muhammad line that he once used as a member of the Carolina Panthers, but Allen Robinson's earned his paycheck. The other skill position players, Miller has been good at times. Availability has become an issue for him with the shoulder injuries. And then the first half of last season, I think there were some detail issues for him in the offense. The other guys, I think they need help. You know, I think they need more talent. If this is the best draft for wide receivers in 20 years or a long, long time, which a lot of people feel it is, my goodness, how could the 29th ranked scoring offense in the National Football League not try to take advantage of that?
It's a really compelling question, Brad, and it's a really good point. And I just wondered overall, philosophically, kind of address the same sort of idea to this question. So when you have Igbinoghani there as the seventh best corner or the seventh corner coming off the board in your mock draft, how do you weigh that versus the value of getting a guy or going after a guy like, say, Cole Kmet, who would be the first tight end potentially coming out of the draft, and you have the best at one position versus the seventh best at another, what that means in terms of value, what that means in terms of what you're doing and how you're supplementing your roster?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question. No tight ends in the top 50 that I did this time, and some people think that's the way it'll fall, that there won't be a tight end that goes in the first round and a half anyway of the draft. And it's a poor class for tight ends. I think that's the first thing I would say to that. And they've got nine of them now with the Jimmy Graham deal official. You would expect them to shed one or two here at some point. At the cornerback position, talking to some different scouts, trying to get a feel for where the talent is, I think people feel like you can get some really good players at that position into round two. I know most years when I've talked to guys, they felt like if you want to get a corner that you feel good about, you're going to have to do that in the first two rounds. So I don't have a problem if the Bears are selecting the sixth, seventh, eighth cornerback off the board in this draft, because they should be able to get a guy with some pretty good skills and a guy with decent size. It'll not be, it won't be like they're getting a guy who's been productive in college but looks way too small for the part in the NFL. You know, sometimes you see these guys that just don't quite fit. I think they can get a pretty nice prospect at 43 or 50 at that cornerback position. And Artie Burns, as I said yesterday, guys, follow the money, a $1 million deal for 1 year to come in and sign here. That's nothing in the realm of what Prince Amukamara got several years ago when he came over from Jacksonville in free agency on a prove-it deal. Prince that season made $7 million. So the Bears felt like he was a guy that was going to be able to go out and play pretty good football with them. When they pay Artie Burns the minimum of $1 million, I think that tells you where their level of expectations are. They've got some hope that he's a former first-round draft pick that could flourish perhaps in a new system with some new voices talking to him. But, again, at the end of the day, when you're not sure about something and how things are going to unfold for a team, you can never go wrong if you follow the money.
Brad, we'll let you go, but quickly as on the way out here, as I looked at your draft and studied all the players, and you can't help but notice a lot of the schools they go to, right? We see a lot of guys from Alabama and LSU and Clemson and all the places where we imagine the best players are, but we don't see a lot of guys from smaller schools. I'm wondering if the circumstances going on around the draft will prevent some of those guys from being drafted higher, smaller school guys. Are they going to be left to later rounds just because there is concern about enough information and all the rest of it?
Yeah, I think some guys that I talked to for the story I wrote last week talked about looking for the term they used over and over again was cleaner picks. They wanted the cleaner guy. So when they say clean, they mean a guy with fewer questions, and that's what you can get with some of the small school guys because it's a natural question. Okay, he did this in Division II. How does this transfer? How would he perform in the Big Ten? What would this kind of player look like in the SEC? And so there's a lot of projection involved. So, yeah, the cleaner prospect is going to be the guy who sort of rises to the top. And along with the size of the program, I think one of the things that they're going to lean heavily on is how will this guy learn? What is this guy going to be like when we first expose him to our offensive playbook or our defensive playbook? Because without an off-season program, and it certainly looks like those could be wiped out completely, you're going to talk about rookies who, instead of getting a taste of things in early May and rookie mini camp and then being able to go through the OTAs and some of that and then a full team mini camp where they've got an exposure to not only the playbook but their new teammates and new coaches, and they've got the iPads that they've got their tablets with their playbook on them that they can take with them during the summer. They show up knowing what they need to do in training camp. This is going to be a situation where this draft class is probably going to go to training camp and they're not going to know how this team stretches. You know, they're not going to know all these things. So the cleaner prospect is that guy with a greater capacity to learn. Sometimes you get that from the big school guys who've got, a lot of playing time at a high level.
All righty, Bigsy. Thank you, buddy. Be safe. We appreciate
Thanks,
it as
Brad.
Always.
Good stuff.
Stay safe, boys. Be good.
Yep.
All right. 312-644-6767. Mully and Hall at Chicago Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.